From the studios of EWTN, this is Open Line with today's host, Father Gerald Murray. In North America, call toll-free 1-833-288-EWTN. That's 1-833-288-3986. Outside North America, call 1-205-271-2985 or send an email to openline@ewtn.com.
A tremendous Thursday to each and every one of you. Thanks so much for tuning in to EWTN's Open Line. Father Gerald Murray is in the house ready to answer your questions about the Catholic faith, canon law, and such matters. If you would like to be part of the program, we would love to talk to you. The number is 833-288-EWTN. That is a free telephone call anywhere in North America, 833-288-3986. If you're outside the United States and Canada, we'd still love to hear from you. That number is 1-205-271-2985, and we'll even put you straight to the front of the line at 1-205-271-2985. And you can always send us an email. That email address is openline@ewtn.com. I'm Jack Williams. Pedro Quiles producing the program. Your call screener is Ace McKay and Michael McCall handling our social media efforts. So if you're watching us on YouTube or Facebook Live, you can type a question into the chat window, and it may find its way to us by the end of the program. And our host, as he is every Thursday, Father Gerald Murray from that tropical paradise, New York City. How are you?
I'm doing great, Jack. Yeah, today we have 90-degree weather in New York, so summer is making its arrival here.
There you go. I got an email here from Robert, and he says, good afternoon. I was baptized into the Catholic Church this past April, the 19th to be exact, and I have been really nervous about going to my first confession. I don't feel that since my baptism I have committed a sin worthy of confession, so my question is, do I go to my first confession just to go through the steps for the experience for future missteps, or do I wait until I feel like I've done something to warrant a more specific confession?
Well, a very good question. Confession is for the forgiveness of sin. There are two types of sin, venial sin and mortal sin. So venial sins are smaller sins, and those can be forgiven outside of the sacrament of penance. So those are forgiven by reciting the Confiteor, reciting, including the Our Father, asking God pardon, even in our own words, saying the act of contrition. Mortal sins are forgiven in the sacrament of penance. So if you do have a mortal sin, yes, you need to go to confession, and you should go as soon as possible, and certainly you should not receive communion until you've gone to confession. Now, if you simply have venial sins, you can still go to confession because there's a grace that comes in addition to the pardon of sins. There's strengthening in good resolutions, and the act of going to confession is itself a worship, an act of worship of God and a sign of humility, so and a recognition that God is the source of forgiveness. So I would say it's a good idea to go to confession even if you only have a few sins. And this, of course, requires the examination of conscience to think back what you've done wrong and any circumstances around it, so that would either heighten or lessen the gravity of the sin. So, yeah, I would say new Catholics experience the sacrament of penance without any trepidation because, you know, the priest is there as the minister of Christ, and the sacrament itself will give you spiritual strength.
833-288-EWTN is our toll-free number, 833-288-3986. Adam writes in, does every priest have the right to celebrate the traditional Latin Mass? If so, should Pope Leo XIV go back to Pope Benedict's liberation of that liturgy? Thanks.
Well, that's a good question, and it's got a technical side to it because, yes, the Catholic priests who were ordained before the issuance by Pope Francis of Traditionis Custodes, they do not need permission to celebrate the Latin Mass from the Holy See. Priests ordained after the issuance of Traditionis Custodes need to be given that permission by the Holy See, and the reports are that the Holy See is reluctant to give that. Now, as regards the other celebrations of the Mass, those are regulated by the diocesan bishop. So public celebrations of the Mass need the permission of the bishop in order to, this applies to diocesan clergy, in order for that to be done in accordance with the dictates of Traditionis Custodes. Now, private Mass, that was granted to all priests to say that Mass without a congregation by Summorum Pontificum, and the language of Traditionis Custodes is that if a priest travels outside of his diocese, that he needs permission from the bishop of the place he's going to celebrate even a private Mass. Now, I don't think that law is applied because priests travel on vacation or for spiritual purposes, and I don't think that provision is actually being implemented. But given the provisions of Traditionis Custodes, or a priest should get permission from his local bishop if he's going to have a public celebration of the Mass. And as for the private celebration of Mass, I'm going to have to go back and look at the specific wording. But I believe the presumption is that he does have it in his own diocese, would only need permission if he leaves the diocese.
833-288-EWTN is our toll-free number. 833-288-3986. Wide open phone lines for you today on this Open Line Thursday. Gabriel writes in, good afternoon, Father Murray. I currently attend Mass as a non-Catholic Christian. I am also awaiting an OCIA class to begin, but I'm wondering if I can still participate in some of the sacraments, specifically confession.
Well, now, the question is, are you a baptized person or not? And those who are not baptized cannot receive any of the other sacraments until they are baptized. Now, strictly speaking, the order of Christian initiation of adults only applies to non-baptized persons, because those who are baptized are already joined to the church through the sacrament of baptism, but their communion is imperfect. So what we say is the baptized come into full communion with the church by making the profession of faith. And at that time, they receive Holy Eucharist, confirmation, sacrament of penance, and so that's the way it goes. Now, you have cases where people who are baptized and have not made their first, have not made their profession of faith, but then are in serious danger. For instance, they want to go to confession in order to be freed from mortal sin. In my opinion, it's permissible to hear the confession of those people because they are already in imperfect communion with the church. They believe in the efficacy of the sacrament and its nature. They simply have not arrived at the point in the ritual process leading up to making their profession of faith and First Communion such that they could receive. Now, the same would not apply to making communion. They should not receive communion until they made their profession of faith. But this is out of pastoral solicitude that someone who desires to be freed from mortal sin would be given the assurance that they could be through the reception of the sacrament of penance.
Thanks so much for that email. We appreciate it. 833-288-EWTN. That's our toll-free number. It is an absolutely free phone call anywhere in North America. 833-288-3986. We've lost Barbara, it looks like. We had Barbara. We've still got four open phone lines for you. So pick up the phone and give us a call at 833-288-EWTN. That's 833-288-3986. You can always send us an email. That email address is openline@ewtn.com. That's openline, all one word, @ewtn.com. And you can even text your question to Father Murray. He's a 21st century kind of priest. Text the letters EWTN to 58177. Wait for our response. Then text us your first name and your brief question. And remember, message and data rates may apply. And you can also leave your question on our listener comment line. That's available to you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Just give us a call at 1-205-795-5773. Leave that message and it may get to a future episode of EWTN's Open Line Thursday. 833-288-EWTN. That's 833-288-3986. It's Open Line Thursday with Father Gerald Murray.
This is Open Line on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. If you have a question, call 1-833-288-EWTN. That's 1-833-288-3986. Outside North America, call 1-205-271-2985. Or send us an email to openline@ewtn.com.
You know, we've been talking this week and all month long here in the month of June. That's just a couple days old. We've got a lot of anniversaries. Most of our friars from the Franciscan Missionaries of the Eternal Word were ordained during the month of June. And today, June 5th, is the anniversary of Father Dominic and Father Miguel, who were both ordained 21 years ago today. It's hard to imagine. I remember via EWTN television sort of walking through Father Dominic and Father Miguel's formation. I especially remember their diaconate year, their transitional diaconate year when they would assist at Mass as transitional deacons. And just big kudos and congratulations going out to Father Dominic Marie and Father Miguel Marie, who were ordained on this day in 2004, 21 years ago today. Congratulations and God bless both of you. 833-288-EWTN is our toll-free number. Once again, 833-288-3986. Father, have you reconnected?
Yes, I am.
On some level. All right, we've made it. We've made a workaround. So okay. First up today is Frank in the great state of Connecticut, listening on the Amazon Echo. Frank, you are on with Father Gerald Murray.
Hello?
Hey, Frank, go right ahead with your question.
Yes, hi, Father. Thanks for taking my call. Okay, I have a little confused problem here. I say a novena to St. Anne, St. Therese, and St. Joseph. I say it all at the same day. Now, should I continue saying those prayers until my prayers are answered, or should I don't know how to approach it, stop the 9 days, wait a month, then continue again or stop? I'm confused. Should I keep saying the 9-day novenas to these three saints until my prayers are answered? That's my question, Father.
Well, yeah, no, that's a good question. Novena is a 9-day prayer. Now, you also have perpetual novenas, which are usually once a week, such as the Miraculous Medal. But my recommendation is you say the novena. If the prayer has been granted, then you thank God and you thank the intercession of that saint. If your prayer has not been granted, you have to examine it. Was it granted in a way I didn't expect? Or, should I keep praying? And then you have to make up your mind whether you want to continue the novena. There's no rule on that. So it's up to you as you see fit.
Does that help, Frank?
Yes, that's very good. So in other words, then I should keep saying the novena 9 days. Keep saying it.
If you want to. Yeah, I mean, if you'd like to, sure. But you got to always remember, sometimes God answers in prayer. We ask for something and we don't get it, but we get something else. Or, the signal here is that we were asked for something that wasn't going to be good for us, so the Lord didn't grant it. There are all kinds of ways to look at it, but that doesn't mean you can't keep praying. But always your prayer is, Lord, if you wish or if you will, grant me this.
God bless you, Frank. Thanks so much. We appreciate the phone call today. EWTN is our toll-free number, 833-288-3986. That's the number that Larry used. He is in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania today, listening on the EWTN app. Larry, you are on with Father Gerald Murray.
Hi, Father. How are you? I wanted to ask you, when you look at a woman lustfully, is that always a mortal sin, or are there any circumstances that might mitigate it? I feel sometimes I come right out of confession and commit a mortal sin immediately. That's something I'd like to learn more about.
So, Father, I knew we had a little trouble with your headphones there at the beginning
of
the question.
I'm back again.
Yeah, Larry wanted to know if looking at a woman lustfully is always a mortal sin. He says he feels sometimes he'll leave confession and go right back into that state.
Well, no, it is not always, because mortal sin has to do with the gravity of an action. So a glance or a passing thought is not the same as an intentional looking at someone in an impure way and with impure thoughts. So seeing a beautiful woman is not a sin, absolutely not. Seeing a beautiful woman and then imagining you want to commit sin, that is. If it's a quick passing thought, it's not a mortal sin. If it's something that goes on, yes. You have to judge in your conscience what you think it is, and then act accordingly. Go to confession, confess it. If you need advice from the confessor about the nature of it. But, and we always remind people there's a difference between temptation and sin. One could be tempted toward impure thoughts by seeing a pretty woman, but that doesn't mean you committed a sin. It's only when you consciously and willingly, put that thought into your mind and then, reflect on it and, take even, immoral enjoyment of it in your mind, that's where it falls into the category of a mortal sin.
Does that help, Larry, a little bit?
Yes, it does. Thank you so much, Father.
Very welcome. Thanks so much for the phone call today. 833-288-EWTN's our toll-free number, 833-288-3986. We'll head across the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. Lewis is in Pittsburgh, listening on Sirius XM Channel 130. Lewis, you are on with Father Gerald Murray. Lewis, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Go ahead with your question.
Okay, I have a family member that is considering converting, and they're very specific. They want to know exactly what the church believes before they'll make any kind of commitment. My problem is I can't talk to them because I hear different things from different apologists and from different priests as to exactly what the church believes. Now, these are small T's. These are not major traditions necessarily, but I don't know what to tell them.
Okay, well, the short and effective answer is to buy the Catechism of the Catholic Church, which was issued by St. John Paul II, and that is a very up-to-date and thorough presentation of Catholic teaching in all the areas that are necessary to study in order to become a Catholic.
With a very helpful index.
Very helpful index. It has summaries at the end of each chapter, each section of each chapter. It's one of the best books that came out in the pontificate of John Paul II, or best writings among the encyclicals and other documents. So, get the Catechism of the Catholic Church. That's where you need to go.
God bless you. We appreciate that call today. That frees up a line for you at 833-288-EWTN. That's 833-288-3986. Amy is in Overland Park, Kansas, also listening on Sirius XM Channel 130. Amy, you're on with Father Gerald Murray.
Greetings. Hi, Father Gerald. I am a 20-year Catholic convert brought up in an atheist family. So what I don't know about my faith and other, especially Protestant faith, is a huge amount. I have just learned that a cousin of mine, whose husband is a pastor of a Reformed and confessional mission church, will be moving about 3/4 of a mile away from me. And so they have caused some upset in our family, not necessarily with me, but with other family members who have family members, let's say, with some disordered tendencies, and their statement on the finality of where those people are going to end up. And so I'm just sort of wondering, like, what is Reformed and confessional, and what do I need to know about that as a Catholic?
Okay, well, that's a good question, but I'm a little bit like you. I don't really know much about the Reformed Confessional Church. I've heard of, you know, the Reformed Church, which is one of the types of Protestant churches, but I'm going to guess this is not that, because the Reformed and Confessional title, I'm not quite sure what that means. If it's a conservative Protestant church, then it's going to be more biblically oriented than in your typical liberal Protestant church, like the Reformed Church or the, you know, Methodists, Presbyterians, Episcopalians. I mean, they have splits among themselves on you know, what they believe. So, yeah, I don't really know much about that. So, you know, it's, but as a Catholic, the best thing you can say is, well, for me, the goal is not to learn so much what other religions say, other Christian denominations, rather to deepen my faith. And then as I learn, as I become more familiar with people in those other religions, to be able to answer objections and questions. So, I mean, I would recommend, we're talking about the Catechism of the Catholic Church, keep reading that and, you know, be ready to answer any questions that people come up with.
God bless you, Amy. We'll keep you in our prayers as you work through this new adventure. 833-288-EWTN. That's our toll-free number. It is a free telephone call anywhere in North America. 833-288-3986. Encourage you to keep it right here at the end of our program. Beacon of Truth with Deacon Harold Burke Sivers will be coming up next. Today's show, he talks about understanding the Bible and tradition, and they will break open Psalm 10 today in the Soulful Psalms section. That's Beacon of Truth with Deacon Harold Burke Sivers coming up next on many of these EWTN radio stations. 833-288-EWTN. That's our toll-free number. It's a free phone call anywhere in North America. 833-288-3986. We received a text from Michael, and he says, I was wondering, if God knows what we're going to do before we do it, then how do we have free will?
Well, because we actually do it. You know, we make the decision to do it. God's knowledge of what we will do doesn't mean that God caused us to do it. And that's important. You know, God gave us the gift of free will. So free will means that we're responsible for the actions that we take when we enjoy the use of reason. So, you know, we don't say three-year-olds are responsible for smashing the vase if they knock it over at home. But we do say the 13-year-old who throws the vase, yeah, they're responsible. So God's knowledge means that he stands outside. He's omnipotent, omniscient. He knows all things. He can do all things. So he doesn't learn things sequentially the way we do. You know, today I learned something at this point. An hour from now, I'll learn what was the weather like, you know, a half hour ahead. But if God sees everything in one act of knowledge, but he's not responsible for the choices we make because he left that up to us. And that started with Adam and Eve in the garden. And, you know, and it tells, you know,
it's,
you know,
EWTN's
we
Open Line Thursday with Father Gerald Murray.
This is Open Line on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
833-288-EWTN. That's our toll-free number. It's a free phone call anywhere in North America. 833-288-3986. Next up is Ignatius in Saratoga Springs, New York, watching us on YouTube today. Ignatius, you're on with Father Gerald Murray.
Hello.
Go right ahead, Ignatius.
Yes, hello. So, Father Murray, my question was about transubstantiation. So I know that in the Catholic teaching, after the prayer of consecration, the substance of the bread and wine change, but the accidents remain. One question, and this was an objection I heard from a Protestant, and I was wondering how to answer this. They were saying that in nature, when a thing changes substantially, the accidents tend to conform to that change. So, for example, if a piece of wood burns and the substance of that wood changes, the accidents also conform to that change. So my question is, how would you answer that question if a Protestant, like, for example, Francis Turretin says, oh, it's impossible that the accidents remain because if a substance changed, the accidents have to adhere to that?
Yeah, so my answer is that nothing's impossible with God, and Jesus Christ is the Son of God. So when he said over the bread, this is my body, it became his body. And when he said over the chalice, this is the chalice of my blood, then it is his blood. And the church understood that right from the beginning. They did not treat the Holy Eucharist as blessed bread or a symbolic bread and symbolic wine. They treated it as the body and blood of Christ. So this is a supernatural act. Jesus Christ is God. So, you know, when God speaks, what he says comes to be. And that's exactly what happens at transubstantiation, because the priest is not acting as a human actor. He's a human instrument acting with a divine power that he received at ordination, which is the power to confect the sacrament of the Holy Eucharist. So, yeah, the reality is, as the church teaches in transubstantiation, that the eyes of faith see the truth that Jesus himself spoke, whereas the Lord did not change the appearance or the accident of bread and wine such that it looks like bread and wine, but it is no longer such. It is the body and blood of Christ.
Thanks, Ignatius. We appreciate the question today. 833-288-EWTN's our toll-free number, 833-288-3986. Timothy is in Bel Air, Maryland, listening on Sirius XM Channel 130. Timothy, you're on with Father Gerald Murray.
Hi, Father Gerald. Similar question to the communion question. Other faiths that have the real presence, Lutherans, Anglicans, Episcopalians, and, of course, Orthodox, all believe that Jesus is present in the Eucharist. But Catholics have a different term, transubstantiation. Does it matter, real presence, consubstantiation, transubstantiation, and do other faiths have Jesus present at the Eucharist? Thank you.
Okay, good question. Yeah, the Catholic Church teaches that in order to have a valid sacrament of the Holy Eucharist, you have to have a valid priesthood. And the Orthodox have a valid priesthood. So yes, in the Orthodox Church, they have the same Eucharist that we do, because there's only one Eucharist. In the Anglican and Lutheran churches, they do not have a valid priesthood. Therefore, they do not have the Holy Eucharist, the true body and blood of Christ in sacramental form. Even if they claim they do, it's just not the truth. They don't have that. And, you know, they have to look back on the reasons of that. The primary reason is that the founders of Lutheranism and Anglicanism rejected the priesthood as offering the sacrifice of the Mass. So they did not believe in a priesthood that offers sacrifice. So they rejected Catholic teaching on that. And consubstantiation is a term that you do hear. And that means that the bread and the body are together. So you have both bread and body, or wine and blood, in the sacrament. That's also called impanation, that God comes into the bread, into the wine. But that's not what the Catholic Church teaches. So, yeah, the Orthodox and Catholics have the same sacraments, but the sacrament of the Eucharist does not exist, according to Catholic teaching, in the Lutheran and Anglican Church. They have what they call their Holy Communion, but it is not the true body and blood of Christ because of the defect of not having a true priesthood.
Next stop for us is the great state of New Jersey. Marie is listening on Sirius XM Channel 130. Marie, you're on with Father Gerald Murray.
Hi, Father Murray. I just wanted to first talk about the person who said, or someone said, about praying for someone who's in an ambulance, might be their last trip or whatever. I do that. I pray the Hail Mary every time I see or hear an ambulance. And my daughter-in-law is the one who kind of let me think about that, which I do. I also pray every time I pass the cemetery, whether it's Catholic, Jewish, it doesn't matter, for the Holy Soul, especially those who have no one to pray for them. But I wanted to ask you, Father Pavone is putting out certain things that I guess the bishops or whatever, too, to speak with the Pope to see if he could be reinstated. Also, I was wondering if that's the case, can also Father James Altman be reinstated and other priests that have been demoted by Francis?
Well, we have to be precise in the language. Father Frank Pavone was removed from the priesthood because of a canonical penalty, as a penalty for offenses that he was found to have committed, and the Holy See confirmed that he had that imposed a penalty, which had been requested by his diocesan bishop. Father Pavone has a right to appeal to the Holy Father to withdraw that penalty of being removed from the priesthood, because while removal from the priesthood canonically means you are forbidden to exercise the priesthood, because you cannot undo the ordination of a man. Any man who's ordained a priest is a priest forever. But the church can forbid, if it has serious reason and finds that this is the appropriate form of serving justice, to forbid that priest from acting or presenting himself as a priest. Now, Father Altman, I'm not exactly sure what his canonical status is, but as far as I know, he was never removed from the priesthood or imposed a penalty similar to what Father Pavone did. But the short answer is anybody who is under ecclesiastical penalty can appeal for, you know, grace and favor of the Holy Father, the Pope, to withdraw or eliminate the penalty that they're suffering, that they're under. And so he's free to do that.
Thanks, Marie. We appreciate the question. 833-288-EWTN. That's our toll-free number, 833-288-3986. Michael is in Spokane, Washington, listening on Sacred Heart Radio. Michael, thanks for holding. You're on with Father Gerald Murray.
Oh, thank you both. We're going to get 93 degrees here Saturday in Spokane. My question is, Father, if you could comment on the apparition of Our Blessed Mother in Wisconsin, and is the apparition officially approved by the church?
Yeah, that's Our Lady of Champion, I believe, is the title.
That's correct.
That is a... Yeah, Our Lady appeared, and I forget all the details. I've been to Champion once. It's a beautiful shrine, appeared to a woman, and then a shrine was built there, and different forms of Catholic worship developed there, and catechesis, and then it was approved by the local bishop. So it's the only approved apparition in the United States that I'm aware of. I'll put that caution out there. But it is a center of grace and source of devotion for people, and a motive to deepen their faith. So yes, Our Lady of Champion, an approved apparition site, and I encourage people to go there.
833-288-EWTN is our toll-free number, 833-288-3986. Adrian is in Chicago listening on WSFI radio. Adrian, you're on with Father Gerald Murray.
Hey, Father Murray. Thanks for taking the call. I guess it's kind of a question, but it's a little long-winded. So I guess I'll just get just the abridged version. Almost exactly 2 months ago, I had this moment. Just hiking in the woods with my dog, and I was on vacation, and had a really, really stressful 6 weeks prior, and some other stuff going on. But basically, the long story short is I had like a very visceral, very real experience where I felt like, I don't think there's any other way to describe it than like a brush with the Holy Spirit, basically. And it was a really powerful thing, and just this like overwhelming sense of peace in the following days, and just also this I guess feeling like a sense of direction, and like, you know, things are going to some sort of resolution. But I guess my question is, and I've talked to a few folks about this, and I've talked to one of the priests in my parish, but I guess I just, in terms of these types of experiences, you know, how do you sort of advise people to interpret them? I mean, you know, like I've got a kid and a job, like I can't at this point, I don't know if it's the priesthood is calling, but you know, it sort of felt like maybe that there was like a life-changing moment, but I also understand that that there could be other things to it as well.
Okay, no, it's a good question. I'll just say in general, when you have an experience like that, it's best to go seek a priest that you know, perhaps your parish priest or another priest, to discuss it at greater length and to, you know, seek their advice on what that means and, you know, whether this was truly something that God is inspiring in you, or whether this is you know, a process whereby something you've been thinking about, you suddenly found a reason to, you know, put that in the forefront of your mind. Because, you know, life-changing moments come in different ways. St. Paul got knocked off his horse, you know, so they are, divine interventions can happen. That's generally not the way it works with most people, because the ordinary graces of God help us to make good decisions. So, you know, life-changing moments for most people would be when they make a commitment, either get married, get ordained a priest, swear vows as a religious order member. You can have a life-changing moment if you stop drinking, if you're an alcoholic, or you stop using some drugs. You can have a life-changing moment when you start doing a volunteer work. But the idea that's, you know, something that you interpret as being an action of the Holy Spirit in your life, that requires consultation with a spiritual director or guide. So that's what I really would encourage you to do.
God bless you, Adrian. Thanks so much for the call today. 833-288-EWTN is our toll-free number. 833-288-3986. It's Thursday. That means the world over with Raymond Arroyo. Tonight at 8 p.m. Eastern Time on EWTN television and radio. On tonight's show, U.S. Congressman Chris Smith from the great state of New Jersey talks about the latest on the federal spending bill that's making its way through Congress and the ongoing civil war raging in Sudan. Additionally, Gordon Chang, a foreign policy expert, with the latest on Chinese nationals arrested in Michigan for smuggling hazardous materials, the U.S. trade war, and much more. In addition to bioethicist Father Tad Poholchek, he'll be talking about the aggressive push for assisted suicide in the U.S. and throughout the world. That's the world over with Raymond Arroyo tonight, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on EWTN radio and television. And you can get the news from the world over right into your email box every week. Just visit EWTN.com and click on subscribe. 833-288-EWTN is our toll-free number. Next up is Kevin in Saginaw, Michigan, listening on Ave Maria Radio. Kevin, you're on with Father Gerald Murray.
Hi, Father Murray. Quick question for you. So I have three daughters, 28, 27, and 21. My 28-year-old daughter is deaf, and so as we brought them through the their sacraments and the catechism years and such, my daughter was baptized, of course, made her first communion, made her confirmation. My mother passed away last week, and my daughter was in town for her funeral. And following the Mass, I don't know why it struck me, but I said, I asked her, hey, she lives in D.C. She went to Gallaudet University, which is College for the Deaf. I said, just curious, when was the last time you went to confession? And she looked at me funny, and she said, Dad, I didn't make my first confession. And I'm like, what? And I I'm really going to have to ask my wife about that. And I remember we were supposed to have one of the sacraments for one of our three daughters, and there was a snowstorm. It was canceled. And that might have been the one for her. But I'm wondering, what should I suggest and encourage her to do now at 28 years old? Didn't make her first confession, and she continues to go to communion.
Right. Well, someone who never made their first confession and, you know, didn't of their own prompting, you know, say, well, I think I need to make my first confession. We can presume that she didn't understand that this is a necessary part of Catholic life. I would encourage her to immediately, you know, as soon as it's convenient, to go find a priest and say, well, you know, I'm X years old, I never made my first confession, I'd like to do that right now. She can prepare for it by reading, again, the Catechism of the Catholic Church or some other guides to how to go to confession. But certainly she should make her confession. It's between her and God what she knows that she's done. So we just encourage, though, because Catholics are supposed to make their first confession before First Communion, but sometimes things like this happen. So, you know, see the local priest, make her confession, and then, you know, she's be receiving the graces that come through that wonderful sacrament.
833-288-EWTN is our toll-free number. Andrew is in the province of Ontario listening at EWTN online. Andrew, welcome to the program. You're on with Father Murray.
Hi, my question is, should there be a program like a concerned laity program for people who are concerned about the workings or the activities of the church, like in general? And if so, how should that be managed?
Well, I'm not quite sure what activities you're saying should be monitored. What are you referring to?
I don't mean anything. I just mean general. Like, for example, sometimes you hear people complain about things like the way the liturgy is going or something like, you know, different public relations things or whatever and all that kind of stuff. So should there be a concerned laity program to address those kind of people?
Well, individuals who see things that, you know, they think are wrong or could be better improved, they, you know, an act of charity on their part is to contact the responsible authority in the parish or the diocese and, you know, raise their concerns, and to do so, you know, in a kind of objective and unemotional manner as possible. Other things, you just, you know, decisions will be made by bishops and parishes that people will not agree with. And that we just have to learn to accept that in life.
Is it fair to say, Father Murray, that any situation where you may have a group of lay people that are acting as watchdogs, probably a bad idea?
Well, yeah, I mean, see, the thing is, self-appointed watchdogs, kind of has a negative feel to it. On the other hand, if you have, you know, let's say you have a parish or something wrong is going on. Let's say, you know, women are preaching at the Sunday Eucharist, and you write a letter to the pastor and he says, not changing it. You write a letter to the bishop, not changing it. There's nothing wrong with a group of the parishioners coming and say, well, maybe if a group of us writes a letter, it might get some more attention. So that kind of thing. But to second guess and question every decision and to do so on the basis of, like, concern people for X, I don't recommend that, because the bishop and the pastor have the latitude within the Catholic law and custom and practice of making decisions, what kind of music they're going to have at Mass, you know, what are the hours of the Masses and things of that sort. So, yeah, but there's nothing wrong, this is Canon 212 in the Code of Canon Law, to bring into the attention of the pastors and others thoughts and concerns you have that are designed to promote the mission of the church. So it's not just like a complaint department of saying, you know, we see this, we don't think that's right. We encourage the bishop to take some steps or to, you know, find out what's going on here.
Ken is right here in Birmingham, Alabama, listening on Guadalupe Radio. Ken, you're on with Father Gerald Murray.
Hello, Father Murray. How are you, sir?
Doing great. Thank you, Ken. What's up?
Hey, everybody's asking these technical questions, but mine is a bit more personal. Father, I recently had occasion happen to me where I'm having a very difficult time with my balance and I'm walking. So I and a number of people are praying that I have some intercession from the Lord. And first of all, I wanted to get your idea. What is the best way to pray for a health issue? And secondly, at times I still remain worried and nervous. I just left UAB Hospital, and I'm nervous and worried, and I feel like I'm not showing enough faith. And how do I get more faith? And then, and what is the best way to pray for an intercession for a health-related issue, sir?
Well, that's a great question. I'm glad to hear that you're, you know, getting medical treatment, because that's certainly part of the what we would encourage Catholics or anybody who is not well to, you know, take the humanly possible steps to verify, identify what's going on, and then what remedies are available. As regards the best way to pray for healing, there are many different ways you can do that. You can ask the intercession of a saint. You can, you know, pray directly to God and say, Lord, you know, free me from this illness. You can imitate the people in scriptures who were brought, either went themselves or were brought by others to the Lord, and ask them, ask the, you know, the Lord Jesus to heal them. You can, you know, ask Our Lady of Lourdes and get Lord's water. But every prayer for healing, like every other prayer for asking for a favor, is God, if you will. You know, if it be your will, grant me this. But in the meantime, we also pray, Lord, grant me the strength to bear this cross, or to live with this uncertainty, which, you know, is not something I wished on myself. But since it's happened, you know, I ask your guidance and strength in how to bear it. So I would pray for both of those things, for healing and for perseverance with divine grace in bearing this cross.
Next up is Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Glenn is listening on Oklahoma Catholic Radio. Glenn, you are on with Father Gerald Murray.
Hey, Father Gerald Murray, nice to speak to you, sir.
Hello?
Go right ahead, Glenn.
Yes, sir. Yeah, Father Murray, the reason I called today was I recently lost my grandmother, who was a Catholic, and a devout Catholic. I'm not a Catholic myself. I'm a follower of Christ, but she and I had some conversations just prior to her passing, and I was wondering what the Catholic stance is on, well, she told me that the Jews were God's chosen people, and it kind of floored me, honestly, meaning the modern-day state of Israel, and how we had to have an allegiance to that, and I was just curious what the Catholic take is on that.
About whether the Jews are God's chosen people. That's the question. And the answer is yes. The Catholic Church teaches that in before the coming of Christ, God prepared a people and chose them to be the means whereby salvation would come into the world. So Jesus is you know, the promised Messiah, son of David, who has come to bring salvation to Jew and Gentile alike. So, yeah, in divine providence, the Jewish people were given the gift of the Ten Commandments. They were given the gift of monotheism. They believed in only one God. They contrasted and stood out against a pagan belief in polytheism and pagan immoral practices. But this was a preparatory stage for the new covenant. So the old covenant was given to the people of Israel, and then the new covenant is given to through Christ to all mankind, Jew and Gentile alike. So we say the church is the new Israel, and the Jewish people are not rejected by God, but they are called, as are all the Gentiles, to form part of the new Israel, which is the church, to receive baptism and to profess the faith, and to be, you know, the fulfillment of all the promises that Israel received as Christ. And the church is the mystical body of Christ, which continues to, you know, be that source of salvation to the world by preaching the gospel, administering the sacraments. So, yes, that's where we stand.
Father, would you leave us with a blessing?
Absolutely, Jack. May Almighty God bless all of our listeners, the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit.
Amen. On behalf of our host, Father Gerald Murray, our producer, Pedro Quiles, our call screener, Ace McKay, and our social media maven, Mr. Michael McCall, I'm Jack Williams. Thanks so much for tuning in. Back at it tomorrow with Colin Donovan, our Vice President of Theology. Until we get together then, God bless.